So, hello and welcome to today's edition of Cover to Cover with me, Paula Wiseman. So, today I'm lucky enough to be joined in the studio by the author, Graham Allen, and he's here to talk with me about his memoir, Is That Fat Foreigner Rich? So, hi Graham, welcome to the show.
Paula, thank you very much.
So, I mean, that's a title and a half, isn't it? I mean, let's start off by telling us, do you want to tell us a bit of an overview about the book itself?
Well, it's basically, it covers my 23 years living in China. The good, the bad, the ugly, and the and mostly good, actually. It's been a very interesting over 20 years.
Yeah, it's a lot of time to fit into one book, isn't it?
Yeah, sure. But the title actually is quite interesting, because in China we all live in compounds,
right?
And because labour is so cheap, we all have maids. So our maid was walking across the compound one morning, and she was stopped by a Shanghainese lady. Now, I live in Shanghai, and there's a big disconnect between people living in Shanghai and people living outside, even though my wife comes from a village or a town of 7 million people, but she's perceived as being from the countryside.
Right.
So this woman said to our maid, is that fat foreigner that Lee's married
Wasn't
to?
Wasn't that the actual words that she used?
Yes, actually, yes. Is he rich? And her eyes said, no, I don't think so. And she said, God, he's ugly. He must be the ugliest guy around. But then, of course, Lee's from the countryside, so she's probably done quite well for herself.
That's awful.
So that was the start. But then when my son came to visit us a couple of years ago, he walked into our restaurant and the staff looked at him and said, Tristan, you're even uglier than your dad.
Oh my God, how did he react to that? I'd say he wasn't best
not
pleased.
Not very well.
He turned around and walked out.
Well, he's a big lad. He's a big rugby playing big lad, so he wasn't very happy.
Oh my God. So, I mean, writing a memoir is different to, you know, what people might do for writing a novel.
Yeah.
Have you always kept diaries? How did you put it together? Do you just keep notes?
Well, yes, I kept notes. I mean, in the first 12 years when I was living in China, I worked for 10 different companies. I got fired 3 times. Seriously. I got made redundant twice.
Yeah.
I resigned 3 times and I walked away once.
Yeah.
And once I got 5 days to leave China. So the first 12 years were pretty eventful. And I was working for some of the really international names. And some of the international names in China, in the early days, they behaved like thugs. Really. Unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, was it a safe? Would you say it's a safe country?
It's an incredibly safe country, because the penalties for violence or for robbery are extremely harsh.
Mm.
So it's very, very safe. You can walk around day or night anywhere and you feel totally and utterly safe.
Yeah. I suppose it's the threat of, do you know what I mean, if you're going to have your hands chopped off or you're going to be put into jail for the rest of your life.
It's not quite as extreme as that, but it is pretty severe.
I don't know. You hear about this in some countries.
They chop hands off, and they do, do you know what I mean,
for stealing like a chicken or something.
Yes, yeah. Well, the penalties are pretty severe. But the other interesting thing is that the police are very, very vigilant.
Yeah.
And if ever we have to call the police, they're in our restaurant within 2 or 3 minutes.
Wow, really? I mean,
yes, because they're patrolling the area. And, I mean, the things that we were calling them for were fairly minor, you know. But there's a very, very active law and order policy.
Yeah, better safe than sorry, though.
Well, absolutely. But it's a very pleasant place to live, actually.
Well, we should get some of the Chinese cops over here. sort out some of the stuff that's going on. So, I mean, how long did the book take to put together? Obviously, you had notes, like of memories and stuff
that.
Did it take a long time to put all these bits and...
Well, I mean, I was keeping
like a
notes.
Jigsaw.
Yeah, it's a bit like a jigsaw. I mean, I was keeping notes the whole time. And twice in China, I was out of work for seven months. So it started off as a project to keep me sane, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Because I was sending out CVs and looking for extra jobs. And I just started taking notes of all the things that happened to me.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, I've had some funny
things.
No one
will believe this. It's just right down.
I've had some funny things happen to me. But it's really, I love China. It's the people, you know, the beautiful scenery as well, you know. And I mean, they have growing problems, but every country has. But one of the things that impresses me most about China is the speed at which everything gets done. Because you have to remember that Nixon first visited China in 72, Mao died in 76, and they didn't build their first international hotel suitable for Western visitors until 1982.
Oh, really? That late?
It's that late. So what they have achieved over the last 25 years is absolutely remarkable.
Yeah. I mean, there must have been the demand, though. It makes you wonder why it took so long to...
Well,
to do it.
I mean, it was very closed up to that,
yeah,
that sort of period,
yeah.
And there were even at that time there were areas that were still closed off to visitors. But the country is more or less open now for visitors to everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, what's Shanghai like as a place? I don't know. Is it very? Is it a city?
I mean, where I live is called Pudong. I mean, the population of Shanghai is over 25 million.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
It's the scale of things in China that's huge.
Yeah.
I mean, they sold 25 million cars last year. They have 8 million graduates leaving university every year.
Isn't that crazy?
It's absolutely crazy. And even the hospital I go to, it's run by the military. And they have 59 operating theatres. They do 85,000 operations a year. And they have outpatients between 10 and 12 people every day. 10 and 12,000 people
every
day.
Isn't that amazing?
So in 1 year, they would see the whole population of Ireland. It's just... It's
crazy,
just, it's absolutely
it?
Amazing.
I think we should all be going over there. Go over there for our healthcare.
And the surgeon that operated on me, I had a hip replacement last year. He did 620 hip operations the year before. You know, it is just...
That's crazy, isn't it? Really, when you think about it. But I mean, I suppose Ireland is like a little tiny speck compared to...
Well, that's right.
Compared to China.
I mean, the country is huge. But, it's the scale of everything. I mean, in the Shanghai alone, in the last 20 years, they've built 500 kilometres of raised highway, you know?
It's crazy, isn't it?
It's just the sheer magnitude
of it.
It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean... How did the book come into being? Obviously, you know, you're keeping all these notes and stuff.
Yeah.
How did you didn't obviously just wake up one morning and think, oh, this would make a great book. Did someone say to you, you should be doing this?
What I did was I showed the manuscript to my children, and I realised that they hadn't the slightest clue of what I'd been doing for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And I thought, gosh, maybe there's a book there, you know. And I always believe there's a book in everybody.
Yeah.
So
in every family, you
in
know.
Every family.
Yeah. And I'm sure the stories would be wouldn't be able to print half of them.
But one of the most interesting ones is we've just adopted a little girl. She's 2.5, but because of my age, we couldn't adopt as a couple.
Right.
In China, because I'm a little bit older than I look. So we then tried the Philippines, same result. We then tried Vietnam, same result. But we then discovered if my wife was single, that she could adopt in her own right. So basically, we got divorced. She adopted Katie, and then we remarried. So it's
Was it simple?
It's a simple
I'm assuming
step,
it
yes.
wasn't
I mean,
simple.
Well, I mean, when you got the divorce and the marriage celebrant are the same, one of the same, and it's divorce is free and marriage is free.
Yeah.
So there's no decree nisi or no decree absolute. And as long as there's no dispute about property, the divorce procedure takes about 15 minutes.
No.
Yeah. And then you leave with two beautifully bound documents showing that you're divorced. So we told the divorce celebrant that the reason we were getting divorced. She said, that's fine. And then as we were leaving, she said, I'll see you in 6 months to remarry you.
So there's time periods you have to wait between...
Yes, it has to. It's
obviously, you can't get married the next day.
No, six months.
Everybody would be doing it, wouldn't they? Isn't that crazy that it's just, it's so, such a quick process? Whereas I'm sure here it's, I'm not entirely sure how the process works here, but I'm sure it's
quite lengthy. It's much more.
I mean, is divorce quite common in China? I wouldn't have said it would be.
Yes, it is. But it's not as common as it is in the West.
Right.
Now, there are a lot of economic divorces because... In Shanghai, they introduced a law about 5 years ago that you, because to try and control house prices, that one family could only own one house or one property. And people were getting over that by getting divorced, buying one of the partners, buying another property, and then remarrying.
Ah, all these little loopholes, Graham.
That's absolutely.
Finding all the loopholes.
Yes.
So, I mean, have you learned anything from this? I mean, I'm assuming you maybe you're thinking about a second. Would you think about writing a second book?
Yes, I think I would. I mean, China's changing very, 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 very quickly.
Mm.
It's really an amazing country. And as I said earlier, it's the speed with which they get things done. It's just amazing. And society is also changing. People are becoming much more affluent.
Mm.
In our restaurant now, we do something like 50,000 meals a year.
Oh my God.
Now that actually sounds a lot.
Yeah.
But it's only about 140 a day. Now, when we opened 12 years ago, 80% of our business was expatriate or foreigners, and 20% was Chinese.
Yeah.
Now it's the other way around. It's 80% Chinese and 20% foreigners. So.
Wow.
The Chinese are becoming, they're traveling like crazy.
Mm.
You know, they're traveling all over the world. It's like the Irish were really in the 50s and 60s. You know, you're seeing what's happening in other parts of the world. And then you come back demanding much higher standards of service, much higher standards of food. And this is all to the good.
Mm.
So basically, and there's a lot of people getting extremely rich.
Yeah.
In China. I have two friends who are extremely rich. I mean, one of them was taking a friend of mine out to dinner a few weeks ago. And of course, everybody has a driver. So he was picked up. He picked up my friend in his brand new 7 Series BMW and drove him to the restaurant, you know. And as we're driving along, he said to my other friend, do you like this car? And he said, yeah. And he said, but you don't seem very enthusiastic. What's your favorite car? And he said, and my friend said, well, it's a Bentley Continental. Oh, okay. So they go in to have dinner. And when they come out, there's a Bentley Continental waiting outside. Yeah, waiting outside to take him home. And he said, my Chinese friend said, oh, didn't I tell you? I have one of these as well.
Isn't that amazing?
But the other thing too, to get back to, you know, what they've achieved in 25 years, they have lifted literally 500 million people out of poverty in the last 20 years. It's amazing what they have done.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing.
So, I mean, would you say you've learned anything? You've been through the process once now.
Sure.
So when you go on to write the second book,
is
there anything kind of you think, oh, I'll do that differently next time?
Well, that's a very good question. I hadn't actually thought of that.
You must have learnt. There must have been something that you said, oh, you know, maybe now I've done it, I can see I could have done it differently. There could have been a better way of doing it.
Well, there's always ways of improving things. But what's changing? People are becoming much more affluent.
Yeah.
The rule of law is coming in. I mean, some of the things that happened to me, particularly two of the firings that I had, wouldn't be allowed today.
Right.
And I could go to court in China and get a reasonable settlement. I mean, putting in writing things like, we're making you redundant, and if we can't fire you and do another job within the company, we will pay you severance pay.
Yeah.
And then not finding you a job and then refusing to pay the severance pay.
Yeah.
Even though you put it in writing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then another company actually fired me because they said because of my age. But they knew my age when they employed me 6 months before.
Exactly. That can't be legal.
well, they got away with it.
Really?
Yeah,
wow,
yeah,
isn't
sure.
that amazing? That's the thing you never think about, you know, the way the laws work, like we were saying earlier about punishments and all that kind of stuff. But even, you know, work, laws in work and, you know, about how you're treated when you finish your job, whether you finish through your own choice or not.
Yeah, sure. But I mean, as I said, that's all changing. And they have a very strong labour court.
Mm.
But basically, I mean, I've been in court 3 times in China. I won 2 cases and I lost one. But I knew the one that I lost, I knew I was going to lose because it was an employee, a disgruntled employee of ours who actually caused a strike and I had to fire him. But so on the employee side, the arbitration, first of all, there's an arbitration board, and then you go to court if you can't reach agreement. And the courts, the Labour Court, nearly 99% always find in favour of the employee.
Right.
Because there are some, there were some really shocking employers out there treating people like absolute dirt.
Yeah.
You know, and that's all changing.
Yeah, I'm sure there still are.
Of course, of course, of course, of course. Yes, but it's a fascinating culture. It's so, so different. And one of the things that a lot of people don't realise, it's very much a matriarchal society.
Yeah.
The mother is extremely important in the whole scheme of things. And basically the mother makes a decision on who you marry.
Right.
Because when Lee and I wanted to get married, I was introduced to her mother, who I hadn't met before. And the first thing she said to me is, "You're not marrying my daughter."
Wow.
And I said, "Why?" She said, "Well, you know, you don't have a steady job. You're too old. You're too fat." She said, "You're bald." Although that wasn't translated.
She didn't mince her words, did she?
Absolutely. And then she said, "You don't speak Chinese." This was all through an interpreter.
Yeah, yeah.
Because my wife was smart enough to hire an interpreter when we were over the first meeting. You know, even though she speaks very good English.
Yeah.
I think she was afraid there would be a row. So, yeah, yeah. You know. So anyway, I argued with her for 2 days. And she eventually left because we were at that stage. Lee and I were living in Hangzhou, and her mother was living in Nantong, which is about a 10 or 12 hour trip away. So she actually left without giving an answer. So Lee rang her the evening when she got home, expecting to hear the worst.
Yeah.
And at that stage, I'd said to Lee, "What happens if your mother says no?" And she said, "Well, I don't want to split with my family. You better make sure she says yes." So anyway, this is where fate took a hand. So basically, her mother was taking a taxi to the train station. And I happened to be jogging along the road.
As you do.
As you do. And the mother was looking out the window of the taxi and she saw this fat foreigner jogging along the road. And she said, "God, that guy looks fairly familiar." And then she turned out to be me. And basically she said to herself, "Well, if he's prepared to do that for my daughter, he can't be too bad."
Yeah.
You know, so she, I mean, what she said was, "It's your decision." Meaning, if it goes wrong, you can't
it's
blame.
It's your own fault.
Yeah, it's your own fault. Yeah, you can't blame me. But yes, mothers are very, very involved in selection of your partner.
Yeah.
And another of my friends who speaks Chinese was walking around a park one morning, on a Sunday morning, and he came across a group of older Chinese, and they were standing in front of this big notice board, and on the notice board there were pictures of girls and boys, and you know, so my friend went over to one of the women and asked her in Chinese, "What are you doing?" She said, "Oh, I'm trying to find a husband for my daughter." "Really?" And my friend said, "But surely she can do that herself." And she said, no, she can't, of course she can't, she's far too busy."
So was it like a singles board or something?
That's exactly what it was, a singles board.
Wow.
But the mother was there and then she would, you know, find a husband for her and then hope that it all worked out.
God, but, takes online dating to a whole new level, doesn't totally, it, really? Oh, my goodness.
Absolutely, totally.
Yeah. So, totally. I mean, the book is, you've managed to self-publish the book.
Sure.
So, I mean, how did that all, that must have been quite a process to go through.
Well, it was. I was extremely lucky in a contact I got from a company called Inkwell, a young man called Adrian White. And I rang him and I talked to him and I said, "Look, I have this book." So he said, "Look, send me some of it and let me have a look at it." And then he came back and said, "Yeah," he said, "I think we could work on this." So then he introduced me to Chenille Kyo and Robert Doran from Kazoo, who then took it over and basically knocked it into shape. And then basically Adrian again helped me with finding somebody to distribute it. It's now being distributed by Gil.
Yeah.
And introduced me to DeBrays, who are the
oh, they're
the,
great.
The shop,
absolutely
the bookshop.
Fantastic.
So we're having a launch in DeBrays on the 16th of this month.
Fantastic. So it sounds like you're being looked after. I mean, so was that quite a long process?
Well, and the other thing I forgot to mention is that Jenny, my friend from who was our PR lady, she's done a great job in you know, well, she introduced me to you.
Yep,
so
she
obviously
did.
She's done a great.
She's done a great job.
Sorry, Jenny from Heath Bow. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, was it quite a long process from the like this book's finished to you getting a finished? Having a finished copy in your hands, was that a long, did that take a long time?
Well, it's about 6 months. I mean, basically what happens is that Robert now, he edited it and he took out basically what he thought wouldn't be of interest in Ireland.
Yeah.
I mean, I expressly asked for him to edit it with an Irish audience in mind. So that's what he did.
Yeah.
And he took out quite a bit and then said to me, look, you need to develop this sort of section. And that took, you know, I mean, the whole process. And then we had to have a designer working on the cover. And, it all fell into place.
Mm.
But I was very lucky. I mean, you have to have a professional team around
you.
Oh,
yeah, definitely.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, you have to bow to their knowledge, really, don't you? Do you know what I mean? They've obviously been doing it for a long time.
Well, that's right.
And it's kind of like, well, you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
So it makes sense for me to...
Yeah.
Hand my baby over to
Well, it does, and I mean, I'm of an age where we used to write letters, so my computer skills are, I wouldn't say a little limited, they're extremely limited.
Well, no, I'm the same. I'd have the old pen pals when you're, do you know what I mean, when you're younger, had the old pen pals.
That's right.
Nothing like it now, is there, really?
That's right.
You don't have online, I don't know if they do online pen pals these days, but the letter is...
Well, that's right.
Sorely missed.
That's right. Absolutely. But as I said, I've been extremely lucky in my team.
Mm. So, I mean, you obviously love travelling.
I do, yeah,
I mean,
sure.
What's the most sort of, most extreme place you'd say that you've visited?
Well, I mean, my first job was in China, was in Urumqi. Now, when I accepted the job, I had no idea where Urumqi was.
Right.
You know, no idea. I knew it was in China.
You're right.
So I went down to the bookshop. I was working in Thailand at the time and I got a Lonely Planet guide and I looked up Urumqi and it said it's the most landlocked city in the world.
Right.
To be avoided any time from November up to March
when
it goes 40 degrees below and that the locals are prone to heavy drinking and fighting. So that was my first introduction to China.
Yeah, God, you don't get much more extreme than that, do you? You're a load of locals having a big punch up.
Well, that's
for like 6 months.
That's right.
I mean, what was it about China? I mean, obviously, if you fell in love with China, and obviously,
sure.
I'm a Chinese lady.
Yeah.
So, what was it that made you think that made you fall in love with China as a country?
I think it's really the people. You know, it's very, very different from the West. It really is. The thought process is different.
Was there a culture shock when you went over there for the first time? Maybe was it kind of a lot to take in?
Well, it was. But you know, I remember when in Urumqi, basically where we were living, I was working for Holiday Inn at the time, and I was actually living in the hotel. And there were about three or four other expatriates living in Urumqi at the time, not in the hotel,
right.
And they said to me, Graham, you don't live in China. You live in the Holiday Inn, you know. Now, in those days, there were no grade A apartments for foreigners to live in.
Yeah.
There was no grade A office blocks.
Right.
So basically, the hotel was the centre of everything.
Yeah.
You know, in some of the hotels I worked, we had, there were the size is over 1,000 rooms. And when I took over one hotel, basically, we had 200 rooms rented as offices.
Right.
And then 200 rooms rented as apartments. And then in other words, we only had to fill 600.
A certain part.
But then within a very short time, they started to build grade A, beautiful houses, by the way, and grade A offices. And that all took place within the last 20 years, the time I've been in China. So the hotel then became less important in the whole scheme of things.
Yeah, I mean, have you seen many changes from the first time you visited to what China is now? Would you say
absolutely.
It's like a totally different...
It's a totally different country.
Yeah.
Absolutely, totally different. And I travel a lot around China, and it's not just in the big cities, in the secondary cities you go to as well.
Mm.
I mean, I mentioned earlier they sold 25 million cars last year. This is 25 million new cars.
Yeah.
And so the prosperity is being spread all over the country.
Yeah.
Now, in some of the rural areas, it's a little bit slower, but But it is very uniformly right across the whole country. So
I mean, it's developing. Do you know what I mean? I suppose it's developing very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, take the area that I live in, which is Pudong, which means basically east of the Poo River.
Right.
Now, the contract for Pudong was only signed on the 18th of April, 1990.
Okay.
Now, the area I live in 1990, was an area of paddy fields and small little factories.
Yeah.
Now it's an international city with 5 million inhabitants.
Oh, my God.
International hotels, universities, metro lines.
Yeah.
Hospitals, everything you would expect to find in a modern...
Yeah.
In a modern metropolis.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what I'm meaning about the speed of things.
Yeah,
so you can imagine, and even in the 12 years that we've had our restaurant, I mean, when we opened our restaurant in 2006, we were the only restaurant on the street. Now there's Indian, there's Spanish, there's Chinese, there's Mexican, so there's everything.
Yeah.
You know, there's 40 restaurants within walking distance of us, and they've all been built within that period.
So talk about your restaurant. What kind of menu do you have? It's all Chinese or
no? It's all, totally Western. We don't have any Chinese food.
Right.
And we discovered that one Chinese New Year we asked our chefs to cook a Chinese banquet for our staff.
Right.
And it was a total disaster, because they cannot cook Chinese food. I mean, it's bizarre.
I'd say there's an art to it.
Yeah.
You know, there has to be an art to proper Chinese food.
Yeah. Anyway, the one of the reasons for our success has been the fact that my wife, who was a school teacher, was helping me run the restaurant in the beginning. And one day she said to me, look, if we're going to survive, one of us is going to have to learn how to cook.
Yeah.
Because we were employing chefs at this stage. And she said, I've tasted your food, so it's going to be me. So she actually headed off to Ballymaloe in Cork.
Yeah.
Which is owned by members of my extended family.
Yeah.
And she studied. And from not being able to boil an egg, is now able to cook amazing food. So she came back. And basically, the chefs went on strike because they couldn't understand how this little girl from the countryside, because they were all Shanghainese, they couldn't understand how this little girl from the countryside, well, she's not a little girl, she's a big girl, they couldn't understand how this girl from the countryside could cook better than they had after 3 months at a cookery school, whereas they had been chefs for 20 and 25 years respectively.
Yeah.
So they went on strike.
Oh, my God.
So she basically fired them and then had to build her own team.
Yeah.
And then I came back to Ireland and we were very lucky to find a young chef who just left Ballymaloe, Michael Cashman.
Right.
So he came out for a year to help Lee in the kitchen. But a lot of our recipes are from Ballymaloe.
It's a big commitment though, isn't it? Give it a year, spending a year, you know, helping out.
Oh yeah, tremendous, yeah. I mean, and he's now got his own restaurant back in Cork. He's a very talented young man.
Yeah.
But my wife is now, you know, she can amaze Western women with her knowledge of, because they're always asking, how do you make this?
Yeah.
And she's amazing Western women with her knowledge of food.
I mean, I'm assuming you've had to learn the language. Would you say you're fluent? I suppose it's all different languages.
Well, it was very...
China's not, just Chinese.
Yeah,
it's obviously
of course, it's a different dialect.
Yeah.
But what they try and do is have everybody speaking Mandarin.
Right.
But let me tell you about my experience with Mandarin. When I arrived, the company I was working for said, look, we're very happy to pay for you to have Chinese language lessons.
Yeah.
But we don't want you using Chinese in your day-to-day work.
Right.
Because we're employing you as a foreign expert. We want you to teach the team.
Defeats the object.
English.
Yeah.
You know, and because in those days, all the contracts were written in English.
Right.
And then, of course, they used to work me so hard that at the end of the day, I was so tired, I couldn't learn it.
Yeah.
So then my wife, as I said, Lee was a school teacher, so she tried. So we tried for an afternoon and I couldn't pick it up. So we basically gave up after that.
I'd say it's not the most easiest of languages to learn
at any
stage of life, really.
Well, yeah. I mean, particularly for us. You know, from a sort of United Kingdom and Ireland background.
Yeah.
Because generally speaking, in general, we're not good at languages.
No.
Now, a lot of my Dutch and German friends, because they speak three or four languages and are familiar with three or four languages, they tend to pick up Chinese much quicker than, than say somebody from the UK or from Ireland.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's the thing in school, you're kind of forced. Do you know what I mean? It's like you're forced to learn French and German.
Well, that's right.
You know, that's kind of. But then as you get older, the times that I've tried to pick up a new language, it's just like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Just, your brain is just like, nah. Just stick with your English. You don't need to.
And of course, you know, everybody, I mean, the people that work for us, we have about 30 staff.
Yeah.
And most of them, 95% of them are from the countryside, and they come from very poor families.
Yeah.
And they've had very basic education, but they're extremely bright and they can pick up words. I mean, all our staff now can take orders in English.
Right.
Now, they learn off the words. Now, if a guest asks them to describe a dish, how it's made, they're totally lost.
Yeah.
But they can take an order. No, how'd you like your steak? How'd you like your fish? How'd you like this? You know, and they can describe a little bit. But they can explain in what the dish, the composition is in Chinese very easily. But these girls and boys are extremely bright, very bright.
Yeah. Do you miss Ireland? I mean, find yourself missing from?
Well,
home?
I used to live in Connemara.
Yeah.
And I miss Connemara.
The wilds.
Yeah, the wild. But you know, parts of China are extremely beautiful, particularly the west and down in Yunnan and places like Chengdu. And the only problem there is that wherever you are in China, there's so many people. You know.
Yeah.
Whereas in the west of Ireland, you know, you can walk up into the hills and be totally alone. Whereas that's very hard in China. So to answer your question, yes, I also miss the crack, you know, in Ireland, you know, and the banter and but I have some Irish friends in China. I have some English friends. I have some German friends. I have some American friends. I have some Chinese friends. But the banter with the Chinese friends doesn't quite work.
Yeah.
If you understand me.
Similar wavelength.
They're not on the same wavelength.
Yeah.
But China's been very good to us. I mean, as I said earlier, I had a very tough first 12 years.
Yeah.
But I've been very lucky, and my wife and I have been extremely lucky.
Yeah.
In the last, well, we've been married now over 21 years.
So we've
been extremely lucky.
Yeah. Oh, no, I mean, it's obviously something you have to build on. Do you know what I mean? I suppose you can't expect to just go to another country and just your life
just
magicked into existence.
that's right.
So, you know, these things are always going to take, it's always going to take time to find your feet and, you know, build up.
Yes, absolutely.
Build up what you've achieved.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. So, I mean, is there anywhere that you haven't been that you'd really love to go to, or are you kind of you're settled in?
Well, I'm reasonably settled. I mean, I went to South Africa last year to watch rugby. I'm a very, very keen rugby supporter, and I really enjoyed parts of South Africa. Really, really beautiful countryside.
Yeah.
Friendly people. Very, very excellent food. Some of the best food I've ever had.
Oh, wow.
And at very reasonable prices.
Yeah.
But I don't think I'd ever go and live there.
Nice to visit. It's
nice to visit, yeah.
Yeah. So obviously you must get time to read, I'm assuming, when you're not cooking and looking after people in the restaurant.
Yeah.
What sort of books do you like to, read?
Basically what I like is escapism, you know.
Yeah.
Thrillers, I like
crime.
Crime. I like Lee Child. And,
he's fantastic. Yeah.
Books like that.
Yeah, bit of escapism. So are you reading anything at the moment?
Yes, I am. What am I reading at the moment? I'm reading Is That Fat Foreigner Rich?
Oh, that classic. Oh, dear. So anybody that's listening out there, I know we have a lot of listeners that are, you know, they dabble with writing now and again.
Sure.
Any advice that you would give to people that might maybe go down the self-publishing route, what kind of advice would you give to them?
Absolutely. Keep notes of things that happen to you.
Yeah.
That keep notes. And there's a book in everybody. And you know, don't be put off by, you know, the what you think is tremendous expense of doing it. You can actually do it very reasonably.
Mm.
But you need to have a very good team around you.
Yeah.
Like I have.
Yeah, I think people would probably find it quite daunting at first. Do you know what I mean? If you don't know too much about something.
Yeah, sure.
You know, you don't know about the publishing game. You think, oh, it's not something that I could ever achieve.
Yeah.
It's obviously there because people are doing it.
Yeah, talk to my friend Adrian White. I mean, he's a genius. He knows everything about publishing.
There you go, folks. That's what, you'll be getting inundated now with phone calls and emails. So where can people find the book, Graham?
Well, now, basically, it will be in De Brays. It's been distributed by Gill.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also get it on Kindle. And you will soon be able to get it on Amazon.
Yeah, Gill are brilliant. They're absolutely fantastic with their distribution.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you couldn't ask for better, I suppose.
Well, that's all due to Adrian, to be honest.
Yeah, so yeah, watch your emails, Adrian, because you're going to be getting inundated. So thank you so, so much for taking the time to come in and talk to us today, Graham. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Thank
you're very
you.
Kind.